Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with Cameron Relcher. How are you, Cameron?
I'm great, thanks.
Excellent. We're going to be talking about things like vine spacing and all sorts of good things, both in terms of the width of the rows and also the width between the different vines. When you're planting up a vineyard, people talk about the width being quite important because you want to get a tractor down it, or sometimes you see these tractors that straddle rows and all that sort of stuff. What are the key factors that do determine the width between rows?
You've hit the nail on the head. Mechanization is one of them. As soon as you start going too narrow, you're limited by your options.
I've seen tractors, though, that they've got one wheel in one row and one wheel in the other, and they're really high and they just sort of go over the top. They look pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, as soon as you start to narrow the width, you also need to narrow the height of your rows.
Why is that?
Because you get shading. Because as the sun comes up, one row will shade the next.
Mm-hmm.
You want your grapes to get as much sunlight as they can, and the leaves to get as much sunlight. So if your canopy's short, you need to bring your fruiting height down lower. Here in the UK, normal sort of fruiting height is around a metre, 900 to a metre, and then a nice big wall of leaves to help ripen that fruit.
And that's to do with the latitude, isn't it? The further north you go, the lower the sun sits in the sky. And does that mean that you've got to have... I would have thought that would mean that you'd have shorter canopy height.
No, we're basically...
Or width, I suppose wider width, isn't it? It's either canopy height, wider width.
Yeah. Yeah, so basically the leaves are the engine of the plant, so they're what ripen the fruit. So you need as much leaf area with as much sun hitting it as possible. So without that leaf area, if you stripped all your leaves off, the fruit just wouldn't ripen. So we need to have a nice big wall and lots of sunlight hitting it. So
in England in particular, it's more important to get a lot more.
Yeah, it is. Even though the day, we get quite nice long days and that sort of thing over summer, it's a relationship between sunlight and temperature as well. So because those daily maximums and the daily minimums do get down quite low,
mm-hmm.
We sort of need to make up for it in other ways.
Yeah, okay. So, because vines shut down if it gets too hot or too cold.
Yeah, they
do. What temperature range do they typically need?
The 20s is a nice, same as what we like, sort of mid-20s is just nice and comfortable. Once you start getting up over 30, they sort of start to sweat a little. And
I suppose from England, it's not really the 30s that we're worried about. What's the low temperature range?
Yeah, it's the lows that we're more worried about. A vine can handle quite a lot, but as soon as it starts to get below zero, that's forget about it.
Oh, really? So right down as far as zero, they can still photosynthesize. And
well, they'll get frosted at zero, but an overnight low sort of thing of 2 or 3 degrees won't cause too much problems.
Shadowing is a big part of it, and then mechanization is another big part of it. I've been to some vineyards where you can actually drive a car down the slope, and that's not a problem at all. There's room on either side. Your spacing looks a wee bit tighter than that.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Well, I think a lot of those older vineyards, they were planted, a lot of them are on a 3 meter spacing, and they were planted with the machinery in mind of what was available then. The 70s and 80s, there wasn't the really narrow tractors that are available now that specifically designed for vineyards, particularly in the New World countries. They just had their agricultural tractors.
You got your Massey and that's it.
They got the old Massey. We've got to make these rows fit the tractor. So, in the New World countries, the row spacing's narrowing, becoming more and more narrow.
Okay, what about spacings between the actual plants themselves?
Yeah.
I was talking to Mark and he was saying, we were thinking about 1.2, someone recommended 1, we're going for 1.1 because it seemed like a compromise. What's the advantage of tight spacing versus wider spacings?
It's the crop load, really. A vine can only handle so much. And if you bring that plant spacing in, you can crop less per vine but still get the same amount per hectare. So you're putting the vine under less stress, and you know, longevity and all that sort of thing comes into it. Because if you put lots of crop on vines, they eventually don't like it.
Yeah, they tend to sort of boom and bust, don't they?
If
you allow, some vines will produce a big crop 1 year, and if they do that, then they'll produce a small crop the next year.
Yeah,
and
that can happen. Yeah,
and then you get this nasty little cycle where it's all over the place. You never quite know what you're going to get.
Yeah, so it's a matter of sort of trying to even out those humps and hollows.
Okay, so it's more about crop loading as opposed to anything else, because people sort of say, you know, keep the vines together, keep it tight so they're all competing against each other.
Yeah, there's a little bit of that comes into play. And also if you squeeze them up, you're also filling up your land as well. You know, it's making use of the space. There's no gaps in the canopy. If they're too far apart, then you end up with gaps, and it's a waste of space. It's a waste of time for people driving up and down, because, you know, for instance, if they're spraying or trimming, there's gaps there that are not doing anything. It's unproductive. So, yeah, we want to try and make it as productive as possible.
Okay. And you guys seem to be planting north-south.
Yeah.
And that seems...
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, that seems to be the typical way of planting all over the world, except for a few vineyards I can think of. Why north-south?
North-south is because the sun rises and sets basically on one side to the other. So you've the row in the middle of the day, the sun's beaming down right down on top of it. So the vine gets sun on both sides of its canopy throughout the day.
Okay, and I've seen some places where they have it east-west, and then they try and put the grapes on one side.
On the one side, yeah.
Yeah, and that's not... you haven't even considered that?
No.
Why not?
Too much work.
Is it?
I suppose.
You do seem like a man who's trying to avoid a lot of work. Your answers are like, it's too much work. Now we're going to mechanize. It's all, you know, I'm for a viticulturist, I think you're going to be a lazy bugger, aren't you?
No, I think, if it ain't broke, don't fix it sort of thing. You know, north-south works, so.
Mm. Yeah, no, that's the way I've always thought about it as well. I think it was Montana or now... what they call Brancock Estates. They've got one of their first plantings they did east-west.
Yeah.
I remember reading a press release about this innovative thing, and I thought, it sounds like a mistake to me.
Yeah.
The first people are taking a virtue out of a mistake.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
Okay, now that's cool. That's cool. And are you guys going to be organic or sustainable viticulture? Is there any sort of tick-the-boxes type of viticultural processes you guys are going to be?
Probably.
Problem.
Well, there's no tick box exercise here in the UK at the moment. I've been on the Sustainable Viticulture Committee
in New Zealand.
Here in the UK.
Oh, there is one, is there?
Yeah, we're working at sort of developing this system. At the moment, it's voluntary. It's not, you know, there's no certification or anything like that. So it's just, the moment it's just guidelines, you know, because it's still a young industry here. Mm. So,
but you're not going organic or any of that sort of.
Yeah, I've worked in organic vineyards in the past. So, I'll just take the best bits from organics and use them. I think organics in the UK it's a real push. It's going to be tough.
Yeah, Will Davenport does some reasonable wines.
Yeah, no, he does a good job of what he does.
And that's organic, isn't it? And he does even makes wine for the Prince Charles and his Royal Duchy and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, no, he's done well, and he's got a good little setup there. But as soon as you get onto larger scales, you know, fair enough in a climate where you're not under pressure all the time, but here, I think organics will be... On a large scale is very hard.
Okay, and what about spraying? If you're not going the organic route, that means you've got a few more options in terms of what you can spray. I imagine you can tell me if I'm wrong, but you're quite close to the coast.
Yeah.
So do you get misty mornings sometimes? The fog rolls in.
Actually, not too bad. We usually we escape the mist. We quite often it'll sit down in the valley and. Yeah, sort of roll down and sit above the river. But we're mist-wise, we're not too bad. we get the odd sea fog that rolls in, but not too bad. Normally it'll get blown away by the sou'wester that comes through nearly every day.
Yeah, okay. So next time I come and bring my kite, do I?
Yeah. I mean, that's probably one of the advantages of this site is because we do have a fair bit of wind, it's going to create an environment that it's harder for disease to grow. So, yeah, that's already one plus in its favour. So, yeah, spraying-wise, Mark and I have talked about it at length, and, you know, we're going down a sustainable route. We want to tread as lightly as possible. Yeah, and that's why we'll sort of take bits from organics and, you know, use of seaweed and compost and that sort of thing. And spraying wise, it will be very much a sustainable way of spraying. Yeah.
You said use of seaweed. What do you use that for?
Seaweed's a great tool. It's really a plant invigorator. It's a really like a multivitamin. It's got a bit of everything in it.
I remember in New Zealand, you might remember this, there was a guy who used to sell fertilizer on the TV, and they said, "How do you get your veggies so good?" Answer lies in the seaweed, son. Yeah. Do you remember those ads?
Yeah.
So you think seaweed's quite a...
Yeah, no, seaweed is... There's been a fair bit of research out that, yeah, seaweed does have its role. It creates... You know, it's not just a nutrient thing. There's a microbial thing going on there that beneficial bacteria and fungi and everything that it helps invigorate, so... Yeah, no, I think we'll almost be definitely using seaweed products here.
What about frost protection? You know, you can't talk about UK viticulture without frost protection. You haven't got any in yet. Have you thought about it? And it's not going to be like Marlborough on a frosty night. It's going to be like here. It's not going to be like Vietnam.
No.
With helicopters flying over.
I think we'd get a few complaints.
Yeah, they do in Marlborough.
Yeah, I know. We're on a sloped site, cold air drains. So, and the site runs to the sea. So we're only 3 miles as a crow flies from the sea. There's a huge influence on the nighttime temperatures because there's always just that slight little sea breeze, and you know we're in probably one of the warmest spots in all of the UK. So we've got a lot in our favour. There was a frost event last year, further inland had -6. That same night we had +6. So if we get frosted, nearly everyone else is going to be frosted as well.
Are you going to get any frost equipment?
No, we're pretty confident that we shouldn't. We may get a little bit of damage down the lower slopes, but it shouldn't be economically significant. So we're fairly confident that we've got one of the best sites in the UK
for frost.
Yeah.
Oh, well, we'll see what you're like after 10 years.
Yeah.
Okay, then, Cameron. I think we'll wrap it up there. Thank you very much for your time, mate.
No problem.